So how well does Millennium work with your screen reader? Well, we have time to cover the two leading screen readers, JAWS for Windows and WindowEyes. First of all, we're joined for a JAWS perspective by Glenn Gordon, the Vice President and Chief Technical Officer of Heather Joyce, a division of Freedom Scientific. Glenn, I guess the first thing of interest is that when Windows 95 came out for screen reader users, there was a little bit of a lag before we could even make a decision as to whether to upgrade or not. And when Windows 98 came out, things were a little better. But here we are actually with support for a new operating system, as I understand it, built into JAWS for Windows before the operating system is officially released. Does that indicate that, you know, the relationship is better with Microsoft now, or that the upgrade is not as significant, or a bit of both?
Probably a bit of both. I was thinking the same thing, actually, in preparing for this conversation, that this really is the first time that blind people have not had to wait if they think that they want to upgrade to the new operating system. I was thinking about the reasons, too, and I think one of them is that the technology at low level, and typically it's the low level where the screen reader is working, that technology isn't changing that much. There's sort of, you know, two basic ways of approaching it in the Windows world. One is the way that Windows 9X, in other words, 95, 98, and now Millennium do it, and the other is the way that Windows NT and Windows 2000 do it, and those underlying technologies haven't changed much. And what often is happening now is that the operating systems are being upgraded as much by people with marketing interests as they are by people who are really adding new, very low-level technology. So although Windows Millennium may look a little bit different on the desktop, technically it's very, very similar to Windows 98.
How early in the process was Heather Joyce or Freedom Scientific involved in this? Is Microsoft now at the understanding where they say, oh gosh, you know, we're developing this new operating system, we've got to give those screen reader guys a good look in at the earliest possible opportunity?
They've actually been quite good about that all along. I don't think that's something that Microsoft should in any way be questioned about. We are typically early involved in the beta process. They're willing to send us copies of the software, in many cases, earlier than we are able, from a resource standpoint, to work with it. So from that standpoint, they're quite cooperative. The issues come up with, in those situations, when there are problems. You know, when there's some underlying technical glitch, sometimes it's a little difficult to get an answer. And I believe that's the area where Microsoft has really come forward of late, in being able to rally the troops behind the problem and trying to find out, you know, a fairly sophisticated answer to what might be a very, very unique problem to the screen reader.
If a blind person sits down on a system running Millennium and JAWS for Windows, will they immediately notice a difference? Does it look and feel pretty much like Windows 98?
It depends how early in the process they sit down. If they sit down and hit the power button, they'll notice a difference because Windows Millennium boots a lot faster. And in fact, that's the biggest thing that I've noticed, that the system doesn't go through nearly as many contortions when you first turn it on. Other than that, though, at least from my angle, the look and feel is very, very similar. You know, they've polished up certain things, and the desktop's a little bit different, and some of the wizards are slightly different. But conceptually, if you know how to run Windows 95 or 98, moving to Windows Millennium is really going to be quite easy.
I've read different things about this fast boot thing that Microsoft is certainly doing their best to say is a really good reason to upgrade. Some say that you don't notice the full effect unless you have a brand new machine that has been built in a way to optimize itself for this feature. But if you have a plain old vanilla, you know, older system, are you still going to notice a speed increase?
I would speculate that the answer to that is yes, but honestly, the only place I've tried it is on a new AMD 550. And it's a dual boot or multi-boot machine, and so it's very easy to tell how much faster it boots in Millennium than it does in 98. And because they have eliminated some of the steps in the boot process, I would venture to guess that that's going to impact any machine, but I don't know that for a fact.
Given that this is a new operating system, as we record this, not yet on the shelves, as we broadcast this, it will have just come on the shelves. Are there certain rough edges that must inevitably be there in support for a new operating system within JFW? In other words, would you recommend that most people bite the bullet and upgrade right away?
Well, it depends. Since I'm probably going to blow my chances of ever getting a job as a Microsoft marketing representative, I'll probably say it really depends upon how eager someone is to have the, quote, latest and greatest technology. There's some additional home networking features in Windows Millennium, so if someone is trying to, you know, group a bunch of computers together trying to share, let's say, one internet connection, it certainly makes it easier to do that. But if you're pretty happy with Windows 98, you can get IE 5.5 for $98, which is something that comes bundled with Millennium. And if you put IE 5.5 on 98, I'm not sure how much difference you'd feel in sort of your daily operations between continuing with 98 and switching to Millennium.
There's a new help system, I understand, that's supposed to make it easier to find everything you want in the one place, and from the reading of the product literature, which is all that I have done so far, it looks like there are all sorts of interactive tutorials that take you through various steps and things like that. Are there screen reader issues with that, given that it appears to be a new system?
I can speak to the help system. I can't really speak to the tutorials. The help system, as best I can figure, behind the scenes is a series of HTML pages. HTML pages that can be edited if someone knows enough about, you know, the structure of the way those pages interact. And those pages are linking together various HTML help files. So behind the scenes, you're still using HTML help, just like in Windows 98. But the front end of it, the thing that the person first sees when they bring up the help system, is a more integrated selection of files, and you can actually search across files. And presumably, though I haven't explored this, if you don't like the way it's laid out, you can edit the underlying HTML pages and change the way it's represented to you.
So the virtual cursor technology should take care of making that help system quite usable.
It did and does. And in fact, this is an area where Microsoft really has come through with us very, very effectively. There is a bug in that help system that ships with Windows Millennium. And the bug is that if you're running with JFW and the way that our virtual cursor is accessing the internet information and the information that the help system puts forward, when you close the help system, you get the great general protection fault error. And there's not much of a problem with that. You know, you hit the OK button and the help system closes and you can go on your merry way. We discovered this and worked with Microsoft to figure out that indeed it was a problem at their end right before the release of Millennium, before they or after the point that they could introduce the fix into the final product. But we worked with them and were able to get a hotfix to ship with JAWS 3.7 that installs on top of Millennium when JAWS installs to actually fix that problem. And it'll ultimately be in the updates to IE5 and in other Windows Millennium updates. But it's really the first time they've been able to come through and give us a fix for screen reader users before anyone was able to report the problem.
If someone has JAWS for Windows 3.7 on their system before they install Millennium, is that fix applied, or would they have to install JFW over the top?
What a smart man. I hadn't even thought of that. Yes, you're absolutely right. They will need to install it on the top because Millennium will be upgraded with the original files when you upgrade from 98 or 95 to Millennium, and this file is a patch against the new Millennium files.
From a user's point of view, and I guess in the process of developing a JAWS for Windows that works with Millennium, you've had to run it and get familiar with it. You've already mentioned the networking enhancements, which will be great for those of us who have a number of PCs that we want to talk to each other. Is there anything else? For instance, I know that Windows Media Player, which is shipped with Millennium and is also available for download for 95 and 98 users, is a very impressive piece of software in terms of its capabilities. It does CD ripping and has a tuner and all sorts of things built right in there. But it does seem to be a little bit weak on the old keyboard support, and the interface is a bit unorthodox. Are there any plans to deal to the media player with some JFW scripts?
There are definitely plans. I can't give you an exact date. And the support for the new media player did not... there's no customized special support for the new media player at this point, but it certainly is in the offing, especially as that's getting better and better reviews and more people are wanting to use it.
There are other technologies in there that interest me, I guess. You know, there are a lot of people who share computers with sighted colleagues or spouses or whatever, and
sighted spouses.
Yes, exactly. This seems quite interesting. The Windows Movie Maker technology, and I wondered whether you'd had a play with that and how usable that is.
I think I'll defer to you on this one. I don't have any knowledge about it.
As for installation, are there any improvements or differences that you noticed as a blind person trying to install the software?
I'm trying to remember if I actually got it installed or not. I've had to install several upgrades, but I was installing an upgrade of Millennium on top of Millennium, and that talked very well. I've heard from a couple of other people who are Millennium beta testers that upgrading Millennium on top of 95 or 98 also talks very well. It's much easier to install Windows from a previous version than to install from DOS. So try to avoid the DOS approach. It is doable, but typically it requires some sighted assistance unless you've done it enough to know all the prompts. The other thing I want to point out, and this may only affect a small number of people, but it might be interesting to that group, if you're finding you need to install the operating system a lot from scratch on a bunch of different machines, in the Windows Millennium Resource Kit, I believe it's called Batch, Microsoft Batch, for doing batch installs. And you can go through a whole series of questions, and it'll create a .inf file that you can send to the setup program. And so rather than having to prompt you with, 150 questions, the setup program uses the .inf file that the batch program creates and does a batch, basically unattended install, and you wait 20 minutes and your machine comes up.
In terms of DOS support, what's the status of DOS in Windows Millennium and the impact on certain hardware speech synthesizer users of that status?
I will answer this question, but please keep in mind this is my own suppositions and it comes from my own personal research, not from any official information that anybody has told me. That being said, when Windows 95 came out, Microsoft did something to optimize the way that DOS screens were written. And I've never really very actively researched it. I only began to notice that programs like JAWS for Windows and maybe other screen readers, JAWS for DOS and other DOS screen readers as well, didn't read DOS boxes very well. And then they came out and they said, well, you can add switches equals slash C to your config sys file, and suddenly that will fix this problem. And lots of us for Windows 95 and 98, if we wanted to go back to a DOS screen reader, have just put that switch in config sys and forgotten about it. And in fact, if you boot Windows Millennium directly to a command prompt, that switch still works. And so if you boot Millennium to a command prompt with switches equals slash C in your config sys, then the DOS screen readers work fine. However, that switch doesn't exist when you boot Millennium into Windows. And so this problem that has sort of been there for a long time but hasn't really impacted any of us is now really sort of quite apparent. And JAWS for DOS, I know, the free DOS screen reader that we make available, and I suspect others as well, have trouble reading information that's being written to the screen. You can go back and review it with the JAWS cursor, but you don't necessarily hear all the information as it's being written. That being said, in Windows, you don't suffer from the same problem if you're using JAWS for Windows talking in the DOS box. And our attempts to address this are to beef up our DOS box support in upcoming versions of JAWS for Windows. So even someone who now may be relying on scripts that they've written for JAWS for DOS or another DOS screen reader may be able to use some of the new JAWS for Windows features more effectively in the DOS box. Treating locations as lines and characters and making it feel like you're in a DOS box in a DOS screen reader, even though you're using a Windows screen reader. But that's sort of in the offing, and we have some technological developments that we've made that'll allow us to do this.
There is a suggestion that because of structural changes in Windows Millennium that speech synthesizer drivers that require themselves to be loaded in config.sys or autoexec.bat, such as the old DeckTalk Express and the Accent, will no longer work.
That probably is true. My only experience has been with a DeckTalk Express standalone with a version of JAWS for DOS that isn't publicly available. So I think I have a bad test case on this topic. What might what might work, and I don't know this for a fact, is if you open a DOS box and then load one of the TSRs in that DOS box, like the DT underscore driv, in that DOS box and then unload it when the DOS box closes, that might work, but I don't have any first-hand experience.
Yeah, so the era of the hardware synthesizer, you know, may be in jeopardy to some degree if we keep going down this path. It seems like we're all being pushed into software speech.
Except I put hardware synthesizers into two different categories. The ones that require a special DOS-level driver, I think, are soon to go the way of the dinosaur unless there are Windows drivers written for them. But those that require simply a serial connection will work just as well in Windows Millennium or anything else as they did in previous versions in terms of the synthesizers. And there's nothing preventing someone from writing a Windows VXD driver for 9X or an NT system driver for Windows NT or for 2000 for something like the DoubleTalk or for the DeckTalk PC. It's just, you know, there's not been a great demand for it, and no one seems to be wanting to jump up to the plate and do it.
If people are considering upgrading, one of the things that's vexing people, and I guess it's because perhaps that Microsoft have named their two operating systems so similarly, what would you say to someone who asked you, well, should I go with Windows Millennium or should I take the real plunge and buy 2000? When should someone use one and the other?
I would probably take the plunge to Windows 2000, assuming you had a powerful enough machine. And I personally think a powerful enough machine is a machine that's at least a Pentium or Pentium Pro 200 with, you know, 128 meg of memory. And in that case, I think Windows 2000 is a very worthwhile step for two reasons. One of them is that the writing is on the wall. Windows 2000 was supposed to be what Millennium has now become. And by that I'm saying the same base operating system for both the consumer, home user, and for the business user. Microsoft has added an extra wrinkle here with Windows Millennium. I think Millennium got added to the development schedule relatively late in life when they discovered that they weren't going to be able to bring out a consumer operating system and Windows 2000 Professional at exactly the same time. And, you know, their next level, it's clearly been announced, both officially and unofficially, that their new operating system will be one common underlying operating system with a certain level of features for the consumer version, another level for the business version, but it's all going to be based on the technology that's now used in Windows 2000. And since 2000, in many ways, improves on NT, it works very well with JAWS and other screen readers, I can't think of any reason why not to take that plunge.
Why is it a better bet than Millennium? I mean, apart from the fact that clearly Microsoft is going that way, and we either do it now or we do it sometime later, but what makes 2000 better than Millennium?
Well, 2000 is really a 32-bit operating system. Millennium still has vestiges of Windows 3.1 in it and vestiges of DOS. They've just been hidden better and better. But all in all, the kernel of the thing, a lot of the underlying code that's sort of impacting everything runs as 16-bit programs. And to not get into too many technical details, but basically that's saying that the system isn't as stable as one that's based entirely on a 32-bit model and where applications are isolated from one another. When Windows 95 came out, people said, oh, yes, every program runs in its own memory space and can't impact the performance of others. Well, that's true, except if there are 16-bit programs, like one that was originally written for Windows 3.1 or other, you know, helper components. If one of those fails, you tend to bring down other programs and perhaps the whole operating system. And you don't have those underlying design issues in the 2000 world. So in most cases, the system is likely to stay up longer and be more stable. Not to imply that Millennium is unstable, but just obviously 2000 is used in the business and other professional environments. The tolerance for failure, I think, is a little bit less.
And Windows 2000 appears to come in three flavors, as I see the literature. You've got the professional version, and then you've got the server. And is it advanced server or something like that?
It is. I can't do the spiel between the difference between them. For the most part, for a personal desktop, the professional would be all that you'd really need. The server is much more either if you're trying to run, you know, web services, or if you're trying to serve multiple users using terminal services and some of these more advanced features, which most people in their house probably wouldn't need or want.
This may well be a sales and marketing question, and your answer may well be, well, that's a sales and marketing question.
That's a sales and marketing question. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to wait for the question first.
Yeah. Given that the JAWS for Windows disks, the key disks that you have if you are currently using 98 or 95 or Millennium, will not work under NT because you need a different kind of a license. Is there an upgrade path for those people who are running JAWS for Windows under those operating systems now but would like to switch to 2000?
Yes, there is an upgrade path. Don't ask me what it is because I can't tell you. This really is a sales and marketing question. Last time I answered a sales and marketing question, they banished me to the South 40 for about 2 years, and I'm just coming off of banishment, so I'm being a little more reluctant to answer questions of that sort. But if they check on the website, there most likely is information, and certainly if they talk to someone on the sales staff, that can provide information as well. They can provide information as well.
Why is that, by the way? I mean, why isn't there a product that just works with all of those operating systems that you buy in one hit?
I think we may be getting there as the operating systems are merging, but there was a completely different development path for some of our NT Windows 2000 work that required additional effort, additional technology, and at some level a different level of support. And so we've you know, set them up as two different products. One for the professional environment where there needed to be support for some of these additional features, and one for the consumer environment where not all of the same features in NT 2000 needed to be there.
Are there features when somebody gets Millennium that they need to disable or modify, or would you anticipate that with a default installation of Millennium, perhaps upgraded on over the top of Windows 98, it should run fairly well?
I think it runs pretty well. The one thing, just from my own standpoint, that I kind of like to do is change my Explorer views to either List View or Detail View rather than Icon View, but that's sort of a personal preference. I like having the assuredness that when I hit a down arrow, I'm actually moving down to the next item in the list, not the fifth item down in the list. But beyond that, I think that it works quite well out of the box, and certainly people may want to tweak it. But I don't think that you'll be likely to be lost in the water and require a friend or a spouse who's a friend to come help you.
Yes, it's nice when they're both.
Yes, preferably if they're your spouse.
Yes, you've got to be. It's a real computer programmer talking there. You know, you've got to get every detail checked there. Essentially, if somebody is keen to try this and they accept that with any operating system there might be patches and there might be bugs that the beta testers have not discovered yet, there is really no reason, certainly from a screen reader point of view, why people shouldn't feel quite comfortable about going out and buying Millennium right now.
Absolutely not. With the one exception is if you really want to run DOS using a DOS screen reader, then you might want to hold off because you probably won't be as happy in a Millennium DOS box as you are in a Windows 98 DOS box. But assuming that's not your primary purpose for running the computer, then absolutely not. No reason to hold off at all.
Okay, and just reiterating that a bit more, there is no restart to the computer into MS-DOS mode from the shutdown menu, I understand. So if you want genuine DOS, you have to intercept the startup process with the F8 key and then choose the command prompts from there, I guess.
I don't think that that's entirely true. There may not be a shutdown to MS-DOS from the start menu, but there certainly is a way to configure a PIF file for a particular application so you can launch it in DOS. You know, the idea that you have a game that's going to screw up your system if you're in Windows and you need to restart it in DOS. I'm fairly sure that feature is still there. But it takes a long time to reboot two dots and then back out of dots when you're finished in your dots box back into Windows.
But that's an interesting angle. So someone who is keen enough, and I'm sure there'll be some techie people who will do this, may in fact be able to set up some sort of menu choice. If it's not off the shutdown menu, perhaps just off the start menu, using that PIP file, that will bring back that restart the computer into MS-DOS mode.
It's not that it brings that option back on the menu, but let's say you set up a PIP file for switch to DOS mode, and that would have the configuration set up such that when you chose that option from the menu, whatever you chose to call it, it would actually restart the computer, put it in DOS, and let you run there. And then when you were finished in DOS, you could reboot the computer or type exit, and Windows would start up again.
Glenn Gordon, Vice President and Chief Technical Officer of Hinter Joyce, a division of Freedom Scientific, thanks for joining us.